Gus. How you doing, man?
Great.
Excellent. So you guys just shipped another update.
That's right. We're really excited about it.
You're going to talk to us about what you've done.
That's right. We've actually been working on this for a number of months.
Cool.
And we couldn't talk about it publicly until just now, so I'm really excited about that.
Right on.
And actually what happened is we were talking with some people about stream processing.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's important to be able to do complex event processing. That's one of the things you can do with RX. And
I wanted to try that once in an interview. Like, just kind of walk out, do some circles, come back.
Come on,
I'm
keep
following
on going,
you.
Man.
Yeah.
Keep on.
So we want to do complex event processing. And what we've noticed is that one common operation people do in complex event processing is joining the streams together. And so the idea is you want to be able to take, like, you know, for example, the stream of when there's Bart sitting over here with me.
Yes, he is.
And so we want the stream of when Bart is in this room, right? So there's a stream, kind of like, you know, the notion of when he comes in a room is kind of the start of the event, and when he leaves the room is the end of the event.
Okay.
And then I have a separate stream for when I come in the room. And then we want to be able to ask those questions like, well, when are Bart and Wes in the room at the same time? Right? It's like a pretty natural type of question to ask.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually, let's see, it takes a number of different concepts in order to build up operators that can do that. And
okay.
So that's what I want to discuss today,
is
how to do joins. And so if you want to think back to what we're doing, think about how, you know, we're thinking about Bart being in the room and me being in the room, that's the events we're talking about. That's our basic things.
Oh.
And be able to talk about when these things coincide.
Nice.
And so we talk about this whole thing as being reactive coincidence. Okay, so when things are coincident, but
yes.
Reactively. So let's
Excellent.
Get the whiteboard now.
Okay.
And we will start off with the basics. So the first problem is, how do we talk about events with duration? So normally with reactive events in RX are point events, what we're sometimes called. And so in other words, if time goes like this, we draw this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when an event happens, we kind of draw these little marble diagrams. We've done this many times in the past, right? And this has some value x0, some value x1, x2, maybe the end of the stream, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And these things, we kind of think of them as being like infinitesimally small in terms of how much time they take. They're kind of these single points in time. That's kind of a lie, and we've talked about that before, because in reality, when you send the message, there's some computation that happens, so these things actually take some time, right? But for all intents and purposes, really, this is the kind of time we're thinking of as being the time of the event, when you first send the on-next message.
Mm.
Now, let's get... the problem is, now we want to do is we want to be able to say, well, this event x0 started at this point in time. We'll go back to the point event, the pure point event model. And we want to say, but it really kind of lasted until maybe, like, this point, right? So, for example, this might be... when Bart enters the room, right, and then you want to say, well, he was in the room until this point, so this is the duration of the event of him being in the room.
Okay.
And that's kind of the same as like mouse enter, mouse move, so you have the mouse dragging into a control, right? And so you have the mouse enter happens, and then the mouse leave happens when you eventually leave the control. So you can think of these events like mouse up, mouse down, and so that actually gives us a clue as to one way people actually represent duration of events. So .NET events are also point events.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they usually do it is they actually have two event streams. They have, like, you know, the enter and leave, or mouse up, mouse down, or whatever. And they have, like, an enter, and then a leave happens later on, right? And then an enter happens, and a leave. And these are kind of correlated events, right? Even though they're two different streams, this kind of says this is when the event started, and this is when the event ended, right? So if it gets more complicated, so suppose that you have, like, enter and leave isn't the best example for this case, but suppose you have some sort of event where you can actually have multiple enters, and they correspond to leaves, but they can be kind of overlapped, right? Like this, maybe. And then you have some leaves, like maybe that's too monotonic. Let's do like this. There we go. So maybe we do it like this, kind of. And then maybe they have... And then in order to track this kind of thing, what you have to do is you have to have IDs, for example. Maybe this, like, this is 0, and this is 0, 1, 1, 2, and 2. So the idea is that in order to correlate these two events, since they're two separate streams, there's nothing tying them together,
mm-hmm.
right, those two mm-hmm. event streams.
Leaving the room, right?
Exactly.
Like, we're here with three people, so if Bart leaves the room,
yes.
it's different from Charles leaving the room.
That's exactly right. So, yeah.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. Well, anyway.
So yeah, if you exactly instead of being numbers, what if these were like people, right? So this is Bart, and this is Charles, and this is Wes, and we don't have a third person here, so we'll get rid of that third person. Wow. So there we go. So that's kind of what we want to say. We want to say, well, we have these two streams of when people enter and leave the room.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily the case that just because Bart enters before Charles, that Bart's going to leave before Charles. And it's not going to always be the same order. Like here we see that Charles leaves after Wes, mm-hmm. even though Wes enters later. And so in order to track that, we have to have some sort of notion of identifying the events across the streams, which means there's some semantics that exist outside the streams that we're putting inside them, like identifiers or like keys or whatever it might be. So that's one way to represent events with duration. Another way is to do this. And that does have some advantages we're going to see to this next model, which is that we can instead say, well, Bart entered the room at this point, and he's going to stay there for 5 minutes. Okay, we kind of encode that as part of the data for the event. Now, the problem with this one is you can't actually issue this event until you know how long the duration is, right? So I can't say 5 minutes until I know it's actually 5 minutes, which would only be 5 minutes after he entered the room. So I actually have to wait until this point, issue that event, not knowing that the fight is going to be 5 minutes. So I'd say, essentially, I would delay this event stream and say, okay, now I know that Bart is going to leave at this point, but in reality, this is kind of time-shifted by whatever amount it is. Now, what if Bart never leaves the room? Do we never get the event that he actually entered the room, right? That's kind of the question. Mm-hmm. And so one way that people actually change this is instead of issuing what the current thing is, they actually say, well, Bart entered the room, and here's like a mutable cell where I'm going to stick in the time when I know that he actually leaves. So right now it's kind of like unknown or infinite. And at some point here we change it. At this point we change this cell, we override it with like 5 minutes. And so that way, you kind of look at this thing, and then it says the wrong value, or a guess at the value, and at some point you update that. That's kind of another model people use. Now, if you take this one step further, and instead say, well, look at this, you know, when Bart enters the room, it's kind of like, I don't know when he's going to leave the room, but I can say maybe this is a future, a task of time. Saying, at some point in the future, I'm going to know how much time he's going to take to be in the room, but I don't know, you know, when that's going to be available. But I can ask this. I can kind of wait for it to give me an answer. So then I can immediately issue the event. If I want to care about when the time is, I can listen to this task. What this looks like, actually, is an event of events. So you can actually, instead of using a task here, you can think about it being an observable of time, right? And then, and this thing, right, is already an observable, but now it's an observable of time, which means that it's an event stream that then has, each event has itself an event stream, which is the time. Right? And then maybe here there's another one that they can overlap, you know, 4 minutes. And maybe this guy comes down here and says 1 minute. So now we have these event stream of event streams, where the first event denotes the fact that the event started, and then the second, the inner event, of signals that it closes. Now, there's no reason, in fact, that you need the time thing here, because in reality, the fact that it occurred this amount of time later on is the information itself. So you can actually instead have like special information about what the end is, right? And maybe you want special information about the start of the event. So now what you've got is this type is instead I observable of a tuple of the start information and an I observable of the end. Like that. So that means that when we have this outer event stream which carries start information, like Bart entered the room, maybe, you know, wearing whatever shirt he's wearing today. What's that one?
Recursion.
Recursion. So he's wearing a recursion shirt today.
Yeah. Yes.
So and then maybe he has some end information like, and maybe the end information is the time information, for example, in this case. But we can actually carry start and end information with this model. So given this type, we can do that. So we talked about three different models. So let's talk about contrasting them. So the first model, we have pairs of events. makes it kind of simple to represent, but the problem is that it doesn't explicitly tie together where the events are, and there's nothing in the types that do that. You kind of exist outside of the type system.
Okay.
These things are tied together. The second model was where we introduced kind of a timestamp that goes along with it, but we noted that you can't really issue that timestamp until that event happens, the end event happens, and that may never happen. So you need to have like a mutable one, and that has some drawbacks because you don't know if the value you're reading is the correct one until it actually happens 5 minutes later. And the third one is you kind of have these nested event streams, in which case they are explicitly tied together, and they can carry start and end information. I think that this is probably the most clear, at least in most, and expresses the most clear the types of the three different choices. Mm. And so when we saw this, we said this is what we want in order to express events with duration in reactive. So this is kind of interesting because what it means is whenever you see observable of T for anything, this is kind of like the really specific type about how you might do events with duration. But in general, whenever you see nested event streams like this, that means that they can be thought of as events with duration.
Hmm.
And so we've talked about bind before on here with the niners, and so bind, if you remember, takes event streams, and we have inner things. This is like the monadic bind, and so what we can view this thing as, we've viewed it as before, is about how to like flatten it to a single stream with all these different events projected onto it.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, we can also view this as being events of events being these events of duration. So, for example, we can view the completion parts as the end events for that thing. So this is kind of when the event starts. This is when the event ends. So, for example, this could be like a ticker or a timer or something like that that lasts for 3 minutes. And then the end thing would signal that the timer started here but it ended 3 minutes later here. And you can kind of view it that way.
Really interesting.
Now once you start viewing the world this way, then it becomes clear how you can talk about coincidence. What coincidence means now is that if I draw some more pictures, we have lots of pictures and we'll have some discussion.
No, picture's good. Picture's good.
So if we have two different event streams, just do these two right now, and we'll just this is the way I'm going to do this for today.
Okay.
In general, it means that this is the start of the event, and this is the end of the event. And this is the event stream, right? Now I have this other guy over here. Maybe he lasts like this, and let's do this, and maybe there. Okay. So now what we want to do is want to say, when do these things coincident? Okay? And what coincidence means is that two events are happening at the same time. Again, that's simple. So what I want to say is, for example, I want to be able to eventually ask the question, when is Bart and I, for example, are in the same room?
Yes.
And so I need to know when that event is coincident.
You could think of it like calendar planning in Outlook, right?
Yes.
You book conference rooms, you see like those color bars that say like, At that point, people are available to mm-hmm. have a meeting. Only here it's like reactive data, like
yes.
you're sort of watching the future, if you will, and sort of figuring out at which points, two people are in the same place. But like the way to visualize it is related to that thing in Outlook, right?
That's right.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. And so what we're going to do is we'll take these two event streams. We'll call this one X's and this one Y's. And we're just going to ask when these events overlap, right? So this event kind of has this duration, right? And this one has this duration. So these things kind of overlap in time. Because if time's going this way, mm-hmm. right, we basically want to ask is, when are events live that overlap with each other from this stream to this stream? So for example, if this is event, we'll call this X0 and X1, and Y0, Y1, Y2. So which X's and which Y's overlap, right? So what we know is at this point in time, we know that X0 and Y0, overlap, right? Because Y is already active, but now X0 just became active, so now they actually are overlapping in time, right? Now we can do the same thing here. So now X1 and Y0 are overlapping. And now let's see. This one ends, so it doesn't overlap with Y1. But X1 and Y1 do overlap. And now this one ends. This one doesn't overlap with anything. So that's kind of the coincidence thing for this thing, is that these events overlap, and we know that they overlap at these places, at these times.
Okay.
These are the earliest times we know that the overlap occurs. And the actual overlap occurs, like, in this case. So, like, for example, the amount of overlap, the Y0 and X0 overlap, is the smallest sequence of time that is like this. So they're actually like this, right? But this is the first point we know it, that it actually happens. Hmm. And so we can view this coincidence this way. And in fact, if we want to go back to the original question of you know, how do we answer whether we're in the same room or not, yeah, we actually just take the same operation I just did, mm-hmm, and take the stream of when we're in the same room.
The stream of coincidence.
Yes, our coincidence stream. And so we say, let's see, we'll just call this, this is like Bart enters the room here. Maybe he leaves back here. And then we have Charles,
who's here but not here at the same time.
Wes. Yeah. Okay,
perfect.
Now, here's the thing. Now, the question is, when are people overlapping with each other? Now, before we had two input streams. Now, what if I just use the same input stream and basically check coincidence with itself? So you can imagine this thing is projected down and it's the exact same below. Now, we want to just check when it's coincident with itself. Mm-hmm. So now, Bart is going on. Mm-hmm. He's in here. And, of course, Bart's always going to be coincident with himself. Right? So we know that Bart is in the same room as Bart. Hopefully.
Stop being so coincident with yourself.
Yes.
Get out there, live a little.
Reflexive coincidence.
Exactly. Coincidence is always reflexive when you have a string. And so we know. Now, we also know that Charles is in the same room as Charles, and Bart is in the same room as Charles.
Okay.
And we also know that at this point, Wes is in the same room as Wes, and Charles is in the same room as Wes. But Bart was not in the same room at the same time as Wes. Right? He ended right before Wes came in the room.
Okay.
And so, of course, if you remove the reflexive part, which you can do by just filtering out those results, then all you get is people that were different from each other, they're in the same room at the same time. And so in this case, we know that Bart and Charles were in the same room at this point. In fact, we can actually make this as an event with duration itself. And this one looks like that, right? So Bart and Charles in the same room, starting at this point until this point. And Charles and Wes were in the same room from this point until this point. And we can compute that just based on what we just did before, the same operation, but just doing it kind of over the same stream. So now we get to the crazy stuff.
Yes.
So this is kind of like the basic building blocks. And we started off by, first of all, describing kind of the overall problem about checking coincidence. Then we just said, well, we need to be able to model events with duration. So we drew up a type for that. And that was the second thing we did. And the third thing we did was we said, okay, now we're going to define what coincidence means over two streams. And so we showed you a couple of examples of that. And now we also did it on one stream. It's still checking coincidence. Now the next thing is, well, how do we simply express that in terms of operators? Well, it turns out we can actually use the join syntax in link to do this. Nice. So let's do that. I'll show you what it means. So what we're going to say is, we're going to say from X in X's. Actually, let's call, let's give it a name. What name is this? This is like the room. The room event. And so we'll call this person 1 in room. Join person 2 in room on. Now, if you remember, join has join and then like a variable name and a stream, and then it has something equals something, right? And with normal link, what that equals means is kind of like the SQL join, and it uses the equality to check to see when these two variables are equal by some key definition.
Okay.
Right. So it has like key-based equality, but instead we're going to say, well, we do want to do joins, and it is on equality, but it's not equality of like, you know, checking to see if two numbers are equal. It's actually checking to see if their times overlap. If they're just like we talked about with coincidence, right? What really matters is, do the times overlap? So what we do is, now we take this right here. Each time the event, so this, before this was the, this is what we have to have, right? So here, P1's in scope here and P2's in scope here. This is, normally this would be the expression for the key that you want to have for P1 and the key expression for P2.
Okay.
And so now what I just said is that we're going to instead express how much, where the duration of the time is.
Okay.
And then this will check to see when they're overlapping. So what we can do is we can say, well, P1's in the room, and we'll basically say, this is when it starts, and now we'll say maybe, there's a couple ways we can do this, but P1, maybe, we'll say there's an end event on it, right? And then, or leave the room.
Okay.
And then maybe this is P2, leave the room. Now, each of these have type I observable of T, and this is I observable of U. For some T and U, it doesn't really matter. And what it's going to do is it's going to check to see when these things overlap in time. Essentially, you can think about it, if you want to think about it operationally, it's whenever this thing happens, it's going to insert a little matcher into a set at the point that this expression gets evaluated, and it will remove it at the time that this terminates, when the duration ends. And same thing here. So this gets inserted at some point, removed. So if you can imagine it, there's like some set here, and here it is empty. And then along comes, you know, Bart, he comes in the room, so he gets inserted into the set. And now this guy's going to come along, maybe, and he
so
gets, goes in
the room. So in some
sense,
it's only a little confusing because the leaving instead of entering, it's really the entering that we wanted to match, right? But of course you can...
That's a good point.
Yeah.
This is the entering. So this is like, maybe we should write it this way. Enter.
Got it.
So when this is the enter event stream, this is I observable of some, you know,
constant stream
V.
Events.
And I'm, well, this is the same V.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you have some stream here. This is actually can be anything. In this case, it happens to be the same exact event stream. But this is the stream of when people enter the room, and now we're getting the stream of when they leave the room.
Understood.
And
they're joining them.
And we're joining them together. We're saying, hey, look, when these guys enter, can you just check to see when they overlap based on the duration defined by the leave, function for that person. And so now we write this thing. So now let's simplify this. We got lots of things to write in here. So on P1 leave equals P2 leave. And then we'll say, now remember, if we had the reflexive thing, we had too many things, we don't want to do that. So we'll say P1 doesn't equal P2. Select new P1, P2. And this is all pairs of events, all pairs of people that are in the same room at the same time.
Okay.
Actually, this will get maybe slightly too many because you'll get the symmetric pairs too,
yes.
I think. So because like you'll have Bart and Charles and Bart. So you could have some sort of ordering kind of to get that out. But this is the basic thing. So the crazy part is you can actually, you know, use the join syntax in order to express kind of this overlapping in duration, not just key quality.
It's joining in the time domain, right?
That's right.
It's joining
in the time domain.
The spatial domain relational database keys.
Yep, exactly.
Very nice.
Now, with join, we had join, but we also have group join, right? And so what does group join mean? Well, it turns out that group join is actually the most general way of doing windowing. And and so that's kind of neat. All you're going to do is syntactically in order to do that, let me put this over here. So this is still the same statement, right, going
mm-hmm.
across here.
Okay.
P2, leave. And then the syntax you'd use in order to group is, say, into G. And then here, I can't do this. P2's not in scope anymore. G is. So at this point, we'll say P1 and G are in scope. And here we can do this. Now, what does this mean? Well, so each time someone enters the room, we check to see who's in the same room at the same time as them. What we're going to do is we're going to say that everybody that's in the same room at the same time as this guy will be put into some group G. And now this, what it's actually selecting out is pairs of, you know, a person that enters the room and all the people that are in the room at the same time as him. So let's actually look at what this looks like with a diagram, because I want to kind of make this really clear. But first, before we do that, let me just draw the types here. So this was I observable of, like, let's see, person. Okay. Person. So this is person, right? this is person, this is, these are all the types as we go along. I should have written these in red.
Back up.
So it'll be clearer. So I observable of person. I observable person, because we have the same stream, event stream. This is a person. This is a person. This thing right here is going to be I observable of, I don't know, we'll just call it leave or something. Because this is on a property on the person that is when he's going to leave.
On exit.
Leave. Yep, on exit, yeah. I observable of leave. This right here, mm-hmm. What type does this have? This has, what type does it have, Bart?
List of T.
That's a good question. I'm glad you brought that up.
Thank you.
Yes. So you could have it be list of T.
Yeah.
Like I immovable of mm-hmm. of person, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it's even better to have it be this one. And I'll show you. We'll show you why when we get the diagrams. This is actually the type of this thing. It's a stream of persons. And so now down here, what this guy is again is a person. And an I observable of person. So what it is it's a single person and an event stream of people that enter the room
okay.
when he's there. So now let's look at a diagram of what this actually means. I'm going to have to wipe this.
Sorry.
So keep that in your memory.
Okay. Wait, what?
Rewind. Okay. So we have this person stream, I observable person. So at some point, Bart enters the room, and Charles, and then Wes. Bart looks like that, that, maybe that. Okay. So now, and this is like the leave property that we talked about earlier. So now what we're saying is the result of the group join looks like this. At the point that Bart occurs, we get a new output. Bart has now entered the room.
Okay.
And it's going to be exactly the same length as this.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly the same, because it's the exact same duration as when he's in the room. Now all that's going to happen is on this we're going to project down when people are in the same room as him.
Okay.
So at this point it says Charles.
Charles enters.
It actually has the reflexive one too. Bart. And then when Charles happens, when he comes in the room, we get an event stream that's the same length as his, and it says Charles, and it says Bart, because Bart's already in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wes comes in here,
mm-hmm.
we have Wes and Charles. Now, if Bart was longer...
Charles gets Wes, right?
That's right.
Charles,
yep,
Charles
at this point. Like that. And if we made Bart's longer, like that, then his would be still the exact same length as this, his actual inner duration.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have all the other events that occur down here. So basically what we imagine is we take these inner streams and put them exactly down here, and then we just figure out which dots occur on the same places mm-hmm. as these lines. So for example, Bart's contains Bart at this point, Charles at this point, and Wes at this point. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So we take that, and that's the set of coincident events. Now, if we used list instead, then what we couldn't produce the list, the full list, until the duration ended,
okay.
Number one. And number two, we'd lose all the time information about when things actually occurred. And so because we use observable as the mechanism for recording the group, you actually get the time information, and you get it immediately, and you get all the things that occur in it.
Nice.
So that's what group join is. And that's the basic window operation. And from that, we can build other window operators.
Hmm.
So, for example, we talked about group join and join, which you can use syntax for to do, which is very nice. You can also use a window operator, which takes an I observable of T and an I observable of u and a function from u to I observable of v. and produces an I observable of I observable of T. Okay? So, since we're all kind of like these functional guys around here,
looks like it.
The type should tell us exactly what it does. And in fact, it does. So, this is the data, this is like the input stream. So, you get some input stream of like things that are going on. So this is X's right here. Close X's. This is the window openings. So this is windows. And so this is defines when we open windows to kind of capture data. So I can open a window here, for example, and maybe a window here and here. And then the window closings take a window opening and produce a window ending. And so what they do is essentially you can think about it as just being these duration things. So this one, for example, could last to here. Maybe this one lasts to here, and this one lasts like this. And then all we do is the output, or the result is this thing, has the exact same structure as this guy. It looks exactly the same. And here. But instead of having his data, he has, which doesn't really have any data, I guess. He could have data inside of here and inside of here. But we're going to project this data from the x's down to this thing. So x occurs here, or x0 occurs here. X1 occurs at all these places, and X2 only occurs in here because that's the one that's still open. So what it's saying is, this defines when we open and close windows, and this is the original data stream. And so all we ask is, well, which windows capture which data? Mm. That's it. And so from that, you can ask, for example, you know, I can define, for example, I might be able to say, well, I want to take all the changes that occur every day from my source repository and package them up and then send them off somewhere. So I can open a window at the beginning of the day and close it at the end of the day and say everything that happened within that day I'm going to take together and ship off somewhere, or whatever might be the case. But windows are super powerful. And we actually have another definition of window, that all you define is the data source and this func of
observable closings
of V. Exactly. And this takes observable of T. And what it means is that this one has only one active window at a time. So that means there's always a window open, so you don't have to define when the openings are. And these are defining when the closings happen. And so they implicitly, whenever you close one, it opens a new one.
Okay, so can you just step back for 1 second? So,
yeah.
I mean, you introduced new terminology that we've not talked about before.
That's right. X,
and that is window.
Yes.
Now, window of event stream computation, window of data, window. I mean, this is what I'm asking. That's
yes.
My question to you.
Yes.
So you created a new concept for us in RX world to understand, and that is windows of opportunity to find coincidence between different event streams.
Yes.
A window in which to look for computational meaning,
mm-hmm.
virtual time, the meaning of life.
Seriously. So I'm kind of trying to give some practical examples.
And you've done that.
But certainly, we're still kind of figuring out all the things you can do.
Cool.
And I found a bunch of different applications for it. We use it all the time for things like buffering data, like that's going on. I'm going to talk about how this relates to that.
Okay.
But we're still discovering kind of all the different ways you can do it. It's actually really cool.
Very, yes.
Because you can. What it really means is there's lots of different ways of defining kind of these window operations.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you do grouping and windowing and all these other advanced concepts within event streams, these are really hard to do with like .NET events. There's no way to really easily do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are kind of like the more complex event processing type of things you can do with RX, kind of take
awesome.
It to the extreme.
Good.
It's
extreme
so,
RX.
Yeah, it's really fun. So I just wanted to kind of draw one more diagram for this one, then we'll go on to some more practical stuff. So what this one is, is it looks, it has the exact same X's, but instead of having the window structure look like this, it implicitly opens a window at the very beginning, and you define how long it's going to be, and then as soon as it ends, it opens a new window. And they can be variable in how long they are, right? And so now this guy, we do the exact same thing, we just project down, but notice that since there's only one window active at a time, that means every data point is in exactly one window. So that means this looks the exact same structure as before. It's a window. Same structure. Here, that means x0 goes in this one, x1 goes here, and x2 goes here. And note that if we had another point here, x alpha, then x alpha would have been here. So it's not the case that we have a different window for each data point. It's happened to be that in this example. But this is kind of the basic window operations. So now I want to go back and talk about some things that are more familiar to what we've done. So okay. Before we had these buffer operators.
Okay.
And let's see, what do we have? Buffer with
buffer
count.
With count.
Buffer with time. Yep. Buffer with time or count.
Yes.
Actually, maybe you should talk about those ones. You kind of did a lot of work on those.
Yeah, sure.
You want to talk about those, and then we'll talk about how they relate to what we've been doing here?
Yeah, sure. I can maybe talk a whiteboard or...
Oh, whatever, you've been at the whiteboard a lot today. So
yes, exactly. I need some tests.
You do. Well, yeah. We just learned a lot about, min-link, which we learned about binding and stuff like that. And there's actual relationships between what we're talking to here.
Yeah, I would say the window thing is like one of those other, base primitives, and that's what we've seen when we actually looked at buffer with time or count. Mm-hmm. Let's actually explain all of them. But buffer with time or count, you re-implement in terms of the window operator. So what the buffering operators actually do, they differ a little bit from the signatures that you've seen on the whiteboard so far, in the sense that the return type returns an iObservable of I list of t. So given an iObservable of t, what you basically say is, like, for a buffer with count, for every 5 elements, emit a new window. And then you can say whether or not you want those things to be overlapped. So you basically create a buffer with 5 elements, and you send out the buffer when you basically have that I list completely filled with data. You do exactly the same, for the next time. So then you have a sliding window. You do like a chunk of 5 gives me one I list of t, chunk of 5 gives me another list of t. So that allows you to sort of slow down the event stream in some sense, in a sense that you get batches of data, which are the buffers. Now, those buffers are materialized. We have an iObservable of I list of t, which means that you don't preserve any timing information. Mm. Once you look at that I list of t, well, you know it sort of has happened before this, but you don't know anymore when it happened because you just got that batch out. Similarly, buffer with time basically says, like, we open a window of time, and within that window, we collect all of the elements and stuff them in the list. And then we send out that list when the time has elapsed, and we start a new window. Mm. Now, starting that new window might overlap with the previous one. Like, you might have, a different skip operator from the length of the window. So you sort of slide the things, and you have overlap, which is exactly what windowing does, but the return type sort of loses the timing info. And then buffer with time or count is basically the first one wins. Like, if the buffer is full, we send it out, or when the time has elapsed, we send it out. Hmm. So
then we start a new buffer at that point.
Yeah, we start a new buffer at that point. And so that's what we often refer to as a ferry buffer. Like, you have a ferry where you have like 200 passenger seats.
Okay.
But you're going to leave in 30 minutes anyway. Hmm. So if the buffer is if the ferry is full, you don't need to leave people waiting. You can already depart the whole thing. Hmm. It's just different in a sense that when the new vehicle arrives. Like, we have immediately a new buffer at our service for the next people coming in. In your case, you would have to wait at the dock, of course, mm-hmm. for the new buffer to arrive or the new ferry to arrive. But that's what buffer with time or count actually does. But again, what we surface is an I list of T. So you have still relative ordering position. You have an I list in which you can index, and there's a sequencing going on. But you don't have the timing information anymore, unless, of course, you do things like timestamp and sort of materialize time.
And one more thing. So you I think you probably noticed also, originally we had the buffer stuff. We had a list. The return type was each buffer was a list that was contained. And after we did this other work, we noticed that the windows and buffers are really the same thing. Well, and so windows are the same thing as joins,
mm-hmm.
Which are the same thing as buffers. And it's all kind of the same thing.
Yep.
And we noticed that the list stuff actually means that you have to delay when you get stuff out.
Exactly. Yes.
And you lose the time information.
Yeah.
And so we...
It's exactly the same observation that you made earlier.
Right? That's right, exactly. Yeah. So after that point, we actually realized we could implement all those buffer operators in terms of the windowing and joins things.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, ultimately, every single one of these things gets implemented in terms of group join.
Yeah.
Eventually, if you go back far enough,
mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like the king of this. So if you want to understand one thing, two things, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Understand how to express events with duration and group join, and everything else is a consequence of that.
Interesting.
And, for example,
this ties it back to the min link thing. You know,
back.
That would be like next to the select many thing.
Yeah.
You would have this group join mechanism that allows you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just by looking at the signature, you can already tell, it returns an iObservable of an iObservable,
mm-hmm.
which is something that those other things don't pull out of thin air. Like, select many starts with an iObservable and returns an iObservable. Like, you don't get, a new iObservable out as a consequence of executing
mm-hmm.
just the operator itself. And with group join, you exactly get that, right?
Yep.
You have an iObservable, you have some functions that produce some other observables, window openings, window closings, and whatnot, and what you get out is an observable of observables, like some higher order thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The inner ones represent duration, and the outer one sort of says, oh, I have a new thing for you that you might be interested in. You sort of see a new set of data coming out. Yeah.
That's right. Essence. So for example, I just wanted to show one example. So we talked about this. So buffer with time, you can actually define just like this. So buffer with time, if you take a data stream and then a time span of how long you want each buffer to be, you can define it as being just the same thing as the window operator we defined. Here's the data sources, the x's, and then here's the function of when to close a window, which is just a timer over the time span. And so and then you can implement windows in terms of group joins and back and so on. And one last observation is we have this awesome operator we've used for a long time called combine latest.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually realized that's actually a form of coincidence as well.
Hmm.
Which we didn't realize originally. So what that one is it's just all you're doing is just checking to see when things are. I'll just write that. So if you have combine latest,
it's like shoelaces, right? If you draw it.
Yes, it is like shoelaces.
Like,
Yes. So let's draw it. So we have maybe this. Like that. So combine latest, when it produces a result, combines the latest value from both sides here and produces out the value. So this is like A, B, and C, and this is 1, 2, 3, and 4. And this produces B1 at this point, and then B2 here, and then at this point, C2, C3. C4. So what it really does is it just takes the latest value from both sides and pumps it out. And the only reason why 8 never appears is because, well, the B happens on this side before there's ever a value on this one. And so what you do for this one is you, in order to define it, is you basically say, well, from X in X's, if this is X's, if this is Y's, then we say join Y in Y's, on, and what's the duration of each event? Well, it's actually, the duration is the until the next event comes through, right? And that's kind of the duration of the event. So you can just say X is again here equals Y. So we have to be kind of careful about this. Since we repeat X's and Y's here,
mm-hmm.
we're going to need to add a publish here. So we basically say publish, and publish means we can share the same sequence, we can mention it more than once without resubscribing to it. Let's call this X is prime, Y is prime. And then we say this, 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 this. And then when those things are equal, then select new X and Y. And that is the definition of combine latest. So we actually implemented it by hand, this other longer way that doesn't use publish and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But this really has the same semantics as what exists there today. which is pretty cool. So all these types of things about how coincidences are specified are really ultimately all tied back to the notion of events that have duration, the type we talked about in the beginning, and then how we talk about coincidence in terms of group joins. Mm. And that's kind of like expresses all these Windows operations. And so this release really means is we've introduced a whole new package of things about how to describe coincidence, which nice. We didn't have before. And we had all these operators, the kind of the basic standard sequence operators and so on. We had all sorts of things about how to aggregate things and how to that kind of stuff. We didn't really have anything about how to create windows and how to figure out things when things are coincident. And this brings all that back in. In fact, one thing you might notice is if you take some of these coincidence operators, you can kind of remove those effects we've just introduced by using some of the existing ones. So in some sense, we're missing this piece. And now this kind of completes a large part of the puzzle. I'm sure there's quite a bit more you'll be seeing in the future.
Excellent. So I got a quick question for you. So beyond sort of three people in a room and calculating and computing when they're there, when they're not there, what about computing over completely unrelated information? Like, I want to have this window into when all of these numbers are pi. In this random event field. Not random event field. Here's what I'm trying to ask. You already answered my question. The answer is yes.
Yes, you can do it. Yeah, so like here's an example.
Sorry for being unclear.
No, you do a great job. So, for example, one thing that people commonly do is they want to do coincidence, for example, to make financial decisions.
Okay.
They want to say, well, when the stock's going up at the same time that, this thing's within a certain price range and this thing is this.
Yes.
You take all these different coincidence things to make intelligent decisions for your business.
Absolutely.
Right. So what it ultimately comes back to is complex event processing is a huge field, right? And there's lots of things to do it. Rx is a great way of doing that, especially like on .NET where you can express these things. In fact, the programmability is probably the best of any complex event processing system out there.
General purpose.
Yes, exactly. General purpose.
Doesn't cost a lot of money.
Doesn't
cost a lot of money. And no one can buy.
Exactly.
Costs a little coin, though. But right on.
So if you want to express those kinds of things, this is how you do it. So this is one of the basic operations that those kinds of things do.
Cool. So in our next installment, we'll have you giving us like a concrete example of this beautiful stuff, just to keep pounding that out there.
Yep.
So people can get a sense of, okay, let's see this in the real world. Clearly this is a good example. Now, let's see who can leave the fastest. I'm just kidding. Because, you could use this data to see, who stayed there the shortest and start doing some data mining, trying to figure out, I wonder what happened.
Yeah.
So Charles was there the longest. That was the problem. Yeah. Everyone else was gone. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, always great to talk to you, my friend.
Yeah, you too.
You guys, thank you. You guys just keep on innovating Rx. And great job on all the other stuff, the MinLink and things like that. And I know you guys have some other things that we can talk about, but happy holidays, man, and have a very nice Christmas and whatnot. Celebrate.
That's right. Merry Christmas. Enjoy the release.
Yes, totally. Cheers, you guys.